This week on Come Receive the Light, we'll hear first about a husband and wife who made a conscious decision to be celibate throughout their married life, and yet still ended up raising a daughter.
And this girl named Ruth Shemyakina kept a journal in which she tenderly described Father John's care for his wife and the loving relationship they had, caring for each other, especially in their old age, in the midst of many various ailments and illnesses.
A very interesting story with several twists and turns. And then we'll talk about an inevitable change for mothers and fathers, the empty nest, and how do you prepare and cope?
For some parents, it can be a very risky time. Like parents who really have had difficulty with separation and change, if there have been other losses of a parent, a job, health, that complicates it. If they've been a full-time parent, that's different than someone who has other activities, friends, things that are vibrant, important parts of their lives. Parenting is a stage. It's not our whole life.
It's not always easy to think of it that way, parenting just as a stage. It's exciting, it's overwhelming, it's wonderful, it's devastating sometimes, and then it's over, sort of. Once a parent, always a parent, I guess. Welcome to our Christmas week broadcast called Come Receive the Light for 2015. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is the president of Hellenic College Holy Cross School of Theology, Father Christopher Metropoulos. Come Receive the Light is a part of the worldwide outreach called OCN, the Orthodox Christian Network, on the web at myocn.net and on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. We start off this week with a look at a married saint, and to help us with that is our OCN Media Lab team member, Bryce Buffenbarger.
On the 20th of December, the Church remembers a popular Russian saint, St. John of Kronstadt. With us, to tell us more about this beloved saint, is Dr. David Ford, professor of church history at St. Tikhon's Orthodox Theological Seminary. Dr. Ford has been joining us on a monthly basis, sharing the lives of married saints. Welcome back, Dr. Ford.
Thank you, Bryce.
St. John was a modern married saint, and by modern we mean late 19th, early 20th century. He came from a long line of clergy, and he was very pious. What can you tell us about St. John's life when he was young?
Well, he did have a very pious Christian upbringing, thanks to his devout parents. And actually, he talks about his upbringing later in his journal. He says, "As long as I can remember from early childhood, since I was 4 or 6 years old, my parents instilled in me the habit of prayer, and by their example, they made me a boy who was attuned to religion." And then he also writes, "My father had a New Testament in Slavonic Russian, and I loved to read this marvelous book. I read the Gospels, enjoyed them, and found them to be an irreplaceable consolation." Hmm. And he says, "The New Testament was my childhood companion, my tutor, my guide and comforter."
So you've shared with us many love stories about saintly couples. What can you tell us specifically about St. John and his matushka Elizabeth?
Well, while John was at the academy in St. Petersburg, studying to become a priest, he had a dream of entering a certain cathedral. Hmm. And sometime after that dream, when he entered the cathedral in the town of Kronstadt, across the bay from St. Petersburg, he immediately recognized it as the one that he had seen in his dream.
Wow.
Now, so that utterly confirmed to him, this is where I meant to serve. And Elisaveta was the daughter of the retiring priest, so it was very natural for them to get married.
They also had a special kind of marriage. Can you tell us about their decision early on to remain celibate?
Well, Father John was intensely devoted to the interior life, seeking real inner holiness through direct personal communion with the Lord. And there was the idea popular in Russia in his day that marital relations would at best distract from that, and at worst, they were seen as perhaps being an actual hindrance to the spiritual life because of being somehow inevitably tainted with sin. Now, thankfully, modern Orthodoxy is overcoming this kind of Western Augustinian view. But he had two other reasons for deciding to be married and yet to abstain from marital relations. First, he wanted to celebrate the Eucharist every day.
Wow.
And his daily liturgies were immensely popular, sometimes up to 5,000 people attending those liturgies. And, of course, the normal requirement was not to have marital relations on the day before celebrating the Eucharist.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, he wanted to be directly involved in ministry to the poor as a kind of home missionary. And he had to become a parish priest to do that. Couldn't just be a monk and have right. such close ministry with the surrounding society. And at the same time, nearly every parish priest in his day was married. So he had to get married in order to be a regular parish priest. But then he felt the calling to abstain from marital relations with his wife to be able to be more devoted to serving the poor. Now, his wife at first was quite upset with this arrangement, actually. As we might imagine. But
yes.
he did come to accept it and to share in the joy of making her husband more accessible to the needy in the surrounding society.
Now, despite the fact that they did have a celibate marriage, I understand that they raised somebody as their daughter.
Yes. As things turned out, they had been married about 17 years, and Matushka Elizabeth's younger sister had a child. Actually, the birth was in their home. But then 2 years later, this younger sister lost her husband and had no real means of raising the child, who was then 2 years old. So Father John and his Matushka welcomed the child into their home and ended up raising her all the way into her adult years. So they did have that experience, experiencing all the joys and sorrows of parenthood. And this girl named Ruth Shemyakina kept a journal in her later years, in which she tenderly described Father John's care and attention for her, and also it's beautiful how she describes Father John's care for his wife and the loving relationship they had, caring for each other, especially in their old age, in the midst of many various ailments and illnesses.
So you described St. John's devotion to prayer and to
yeah.
the care of the poor, but he was also devoted to education as well. What can you tell us about his home for constructive labor?
Well, let me read from our book about this home for constructive labor that he had built for the poor of the city. It included a free elementary school, a workshop where carpentry was taught, a drawing class, a woman's workshop for sewing, a workshop for shoemaking,
wow.
a zoological collection, a military gymnasium, a bookshop for children and adults. There was also a free public reading room, a library, a home for orphans, a shelter for drunkards, and free medical care was given and free dinners for the poor. So it was really a tremendous enterprise of reaching out to the poor and giving them an opportunity to learn trades so that they could emerge from their poverty.
It's an amazing effort that so many different things wrapped all into one place.
Yes, and news of it spread all over Russia. He began receiving donations from all over Russia, and they say there was even a special room in the post office to receive his mail. So he was really a national sensation through this work, and also through his prayer. The many, many stories emerging of answers to his prayer.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dr. Ford, again for speaking with us. We hope our listeners will look for your book, entitled Marriage as a Path to Holiness, Lives of Married Saints. They can find that on our Amazon store, and the link will be on our website. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
That website is myocn.net. That's myocn.net. You'll also find a link on our Facebook page. And when you go to that online bookstore for OCN, the Orthodox Christian Network, any purchase you make when you access Amazon through that portal generates a donation back to the ministry. What a wonderful way to help support this outreach here at the end of the year. And now with our feature conversation for this week, here is our host, Father Christopher Metropoulos.
The holidays are here and many college kids are returning home. Although we raise our children to be independent, this can be a very trying time for parents and even for marriages. Here to talk about empty nesters is Anastasia Carol Cruz. She is a licensed clinical professional counselor, nationally certified counselor, and a member of the Orthodox Christian Counseling Institute. Welcome, Anastasia.
Thank you, Father. I'm delighted to be here.
You know, we have six children, and all but one are off to college or to work, and they're on their own. What do I have to look forward to as we prepare to send our youngest out into the world in this coming year?
You know, that's a great question. A lot of it has to do with how you think about it. For some parents, it's an opportunity, and for other parents, it becomes a crisis. In any case, it's a loss, so there will be a change in your life, for sure. And when children are gone, sometimes they're coming back. Holidays can be a very exciting time, and then there's January.
And then it goes again. Well,
it's
something because you see people reacting, obviously, in different ways. I know some parents would put up their Christmas lights, and then they say, well, what I put the lights up for? There's nobody here to enjoy them. Or let's not even do a tree. And something as simple as that becomes an earthquake type of discussion between the spouses, doesn't it?
It does. And it really is a wonderful time to step back and look at how you see yourselves and your life together, aside from your children.
Yeah.
If our purpose has really just been our children, it does create a lot of questions for parents. As husband and wife, what do we want this to look like? Did we do all of this for our children?
Mm-hmm.
What do we do just for ourselves? What do we do for ourselves as individuals that gives us joy and peace and a sense of purpose that's really important for us in our lives?
It does have to deal with our personal identity, does it not? I mean, the kids being our identity, we having our identities on our own?
Yes, absolutely. Because really, six children, you've been parenting a long time. So if you're looking at just your life stage, a lot of your marriage has been focused on that period of your life where there's family in it, where you're parenting much of that time. And so it's a huge change for people. And when you think back about how you've managed other changes in your lives together or as individuals, that can be a real clue about what you need to pay attention to and manage, because our relationship spiritually, of course, is first, and then there's our spouse, and then our role as parents. So parenting is a stage. It's not our whole life.
Mm-hmm. Do most parents experience some kind of deep grief or even relief when the children move away?
You know, it depends a lot on how they've been thinking about it along the way. For some parents, it can be a very risky time. Like parents who really have had difficulty with separation and change, if there have been other losses of a parent, a job, health, that complicates it. If they've been a full-time parent, that's different than someone who has other activities, friends, things like you were saying, that are vibrant, important parts of their lives. So if you're also struggling with, as a woman, with menopause, or as a male with retirement, or with aging parents, the sadness, the loss around those things can be significant. Another another piece that is often important for parents is when they step back and look at their child and they think about, is this child really ready to leave home? And, you know, we know it's about leave and cleave, and if we've done a good job. It's actually about a year and a half to 2 years of transition for parents, in which there is loss and grief and setting up new traditions and new ways to be as an individual and as a couple.
We've discussed this before. We talked, I think, in our conversations here, we're talking about a marriage could suffer if the family is too focused on children. Is there any more that you can relate to that situation?
Yes. When children see parents that are totally focused on them, as opposed to having that parent relationship, actually the family gets enmeshed in that. There can be alliances in the family so that, you know, one parent is more attached to another parent, and sometimes that can even be manipulative. So the marriage may suffer because one parent is paying more attention to dealing with the children and not paying attention to the spouse. So the glue of the marriage suffers. And if you find that you've lost the romance, you might have to spend some time getting that romance back, that sense of connection back, the mental, emotional, spiritual, physical connection between each other.
And how is that done, do you feel? What is that? What is the sort of the trip? Because one of the spouses may not be interested in doing that, correct?
Yes. And I think if you've got, you know, if you're in the crisis mode, it's time now, you've got a different, maybe, process in place. But if you're at the point where you can plan ahead, it's never too early to start talking to each other about what do we see in our lives at these different ages and stages of our marriage, of our just our own physical lifetime, and our spiritual lives, and then our career, maybe retirement. And it's a lot about getting to know your spouse. Rekindling that that time together. You've actually got privacy in your home. You've got an opportunity to go places and do things and make a dream list of what new dreams do we have. And for some people that is a real shift because they've been so focused on the process of parenting. And certainly if father with six children, that's required a lot of focus.
Oh, yes. It's all families that are in large families, it takes the really sucks the life out of you many times, and you don't have time for yourself, so that's very real. I'm sure there are some struggling couples who think that staying married for the kids is the answer, so they hold off getting a divorce until the kids move out, and I hate to put marriage and divorce together because I don't believe in it. Sometimes it happens, and I know that, so I respect that, okay? But it's not something, of course, that we foster, that we want to do. Sometimes people drift apart, and it happens. But is it a good idea, because the kids are leaving, that everybody plans to just walk out the door?
The toughest times, actually, Dr. Barry Brazelton has done some research around the difficult times for children with a divorce, and I was surprised at the ages. 5 and 18, and it's when your children are dealing with the issues around separation, individuation, moving to this new stage of then leaving and coming back to the home base. So if you would have stayed together until your children are 18 and they're gone, and then you immediately get the divorce, sell the family home, and leave, your children can really struggle with that sense of there's no place to come back home to. They can never go back home, and they can't normalize and find a stable situation again. So it's a major developmental challenge for your children that might not have been there had you dealt with some of that earlier in your relationship. So staying together for the children, I think, can really be a misnomer sometimes. As much as, you know, we all agree we We hope that children will have a stable family environment. But if there is yelling and screaming and fighting in the family, it's important for parents to step back and think, is this the model of the marriage that I hope my children will have? Am I showing them what a Christian marriage is? Because they learn what they live, and then they live what they learn.
Wow, that's great. Okay. One more question. What are some concrete things that parents can do to prepare themselves to be empty nesters?
I think, you know, that idea, I talked a little bit about it before, Father, reflecting, stepping back, thinking about what you learned and what you lived as an individual, and then how you put your marriage together and what you lived together and what you've learned from that, and assessing the state of your marriage. Be honest with each other is a big thing. Statistically, Dr. John Gottman talks about what happens to marriages after they have children, and that about 30% of marriages maintain a high level of marital satisfaction. About 70% start to drop and bottom out about the time that the children are teens. So we know that there's likely to have been an impact. And again, we're just living what we've learned. And so becoming conscious, that is almost learning and educating ourselves about how do we transition into a new stage, is really important. It's like becoming conscious marriage, conscious life, conscious choices, really exploring how you can have new romance. It's ongoing marital development, actually. At the same time, when your parents, or as parents, your children may have a stage of anxiety. They're a little anxious about school. So you're also having to learn about this new stage of parenting that's guidance when they're outside of the house. And it's an exciting time for parents, possibly, to renew, to travel, to have more self-awareness, and just literally fun in their lives.
New interests, and so you're not having to run home and cook a meal or take your child to the ball field or all those things, which were fun at the time, but it's a different stage. I would think another thing that we were talking about is you have two people, let's say one worked and the other stayed at home and raised the children working as well. Then they leave, and then one looks at the other and says, well, you know, you did a good job doing that, but the kids are gone, so bye-bye. And the question then would come in is a deep respect of the role that each party in the marriage had for one another. They may not agree, but at least there is a great respect for what each person did. I would think that that's a part of that healing process, is it not?
It truly is. If you can find a way to say to each other, I really did value this. I appreciated what you did. And even finding a way to validate yourself for what you did, even though the marriage may be ending, healing that marriage so that there is a better relationship maybe once you've gotten through that difficulty of separating, that can be very positive for your children in the long run, and certainly very positive for you to move on. So that opportunity to have a dialogue with your spouse, maybe with a counselor if you need it, certainly with a priest. You know, when you're struggling to express what's really important with each other, resetting your compass on the things that are right and the things that are worthy and being able to speak of those things is just so important for us to find peace, to find that opportunity even in the midst of crisis. And that our goal is to adapt to whatever our life brings for us, right? Suffering is along the way, that, you know, there can be a purpose and redemption and all of that.
They say whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Isn't there a song like that? But our prayer, of course, is, as we conclude our time together, is that people will grow old gracefully, that as their children become the empty nesters, that they find each other, and that they come back to each other. And if they can't, well, they work out ways to do that. Anastasia, it's been really a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Father. It's been my pleasure as well. God bless you and have a good holiday season.
And we send out that same message to you and our listening audience. God bless you and have a wonderful holiday season. This is Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. If you'd like to listen to any of our conversations again, go to our website at myocn.net and click on the Listen button and select Come Receive the Light. That's myocn.net. Please remember, we're a nonprofit outreach and depend upon your prayer support and your financial support. Until we see you next week at this same time, remember to always have faith in what you listen to.